Community here with us. We have Angie Elliott. Good morning, Angie. It's always a pleasure to have you in studio.
Morning, Luelle. Thank you for having me.
And this morning we are talking about something that is not directly linked, or is it just under the umbrella of K2C?
So it is under the umbrella of K2C as one of the projects for this year. We have a lot of support. We believe in a lot of collaboration within the landscape. So we are partners in the landscape together and working towards the same end goal. But yeah, we are partners on this project for this year.
And this project that we are talking about, Angie, it's called the Kulani Collective. What does Kulani stand for?
So Kulani is the Tsonga word for to grow. And obviously coupled with the word collective, it means to grow together. So Kulani Collective is really a vision about a community of artists growing together.
And just to go back a little bit on that, I love the word. It sounds so nice. I can understand why that would go together with collective. But the Kulani Collective, it's a vibrant organization and it's dedicated to supporting and empowering artists and crafters. And what you're doing is you're providing a platform for creative individuals to showcase their talents, collaborate on innovative projects, and contribute to community development through artistic expression.
Yes.
And that is such a beautiful way to introduce the Kulani Collective. Where did this start?
So this project has always been something I've been passionate about, and a friend of mine, Tracy Thurlow, and myself were chatting about it. You know, when COVID happened, a lot of us reevaluated a lot of things in life, and one of the things that really affected Hoedspruit and the greater K2C landscape was most people work within tourism. Tourism was taken away overnight, and we ended up in a situation where many, many people lost their jobs. And so these conversations started about, when people have skills and they're able to make something with their hands, nobody can take that away. So a job, yes, you can lose overnight, but when you have a skill and you can actually create an income for yourself, nobody can take that away from you. So as much as I hate referring back to the COVID days because of the negative connotations that are related to it, there's a lot of positive changes in the way that we think as a community as well that came out of it. And Kulani was birthed out of that idea. And so we started working with some crafters, very much as a passion project between us. Alex Adams was involved in the beginning as well from the little bookshop. And we started building something, and we've kind of found our way along the way as we were learning and growing together. And we now sit in a position where we really are starting to grow into something beautiful and collaborative in the landscape as well.
But you know, Angie, I don't take away that COVID, and I never apologize for COVID. It was a negative. It had a huge impact on livelihoods, not just here in this industry, but around the world, but very much so in this industry where we were so reliant on tourism to come into the country. So you were literally cut, your hands were cut off at the end of the day. And I think that in a way it also forced us to have a whole new outlook and a change I'm just looking at Bianca walking past us, the sorcerer next door with the two most beautiful chairs.
Yes.
Oh, my word. I'm going to have to find out where she got those two chairs. They're gorgeous. But back to COVID. And it forced us to readjust our lives and to look at the box.
And reevaluate what's important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I agree. I never apologize for COVID. And I think it was part of our lives, and it changed people's outlook completely. And I think that I want to say that the more rural community, as much as I think that we think that they maybe didn't go through as much because they're so far away from towns and from working environments, but that was the only means of income to sell their products. So if that pull through is not available, they also couldn't survive at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think you know, in a crafting, they rely heavily on tourism with crafts in this area, and that definitely took away a lot. But it also highlighted a lot of needs and a lot of conversations that needed to start. And I know I shared a little bit with you about how much Africa and African artists and crafters have to offer. And so it's allowed a space where we can actually start exploring those conversations as well.
And also realizing that these are artists in their own right, and they are talented artists.
Yes.
And because we see these artists selling their wares on the side of the road or in markets or in there seems to be a pity amongst them, a sort of thing, okay, well, we'll just buy it because. But it's not like that. These are really talented artists.
Yeah, it's traditional
skills. And it's just that some of their means, the only way or their outlet to sell is sometimes in those environments. So you're offering that gallery opportunity.
Yes.
For them to say, okay, collectively, let's showcase your work on a different level, because it needs to be showcased on a different level.
Yes, so, and attaching the value that it deserves as well, which is very, very important in that.
And with regards to obviously having this collective, Angie, there's got to be a lot of skills training that needs to be going into that. And is that something that you offer them from the start? Do they have to, do they register to be a part of this collective? So how do you monitor the people and the skill training that needs to be going out for them?
So there's a few different ways that training happens with Kulani. So the first thing, when we started, we identified some crafters that were already operational in Akenhoek. They are weavers. They make the most beautiful hand-woven rugs. We engaged with them initially, and that was our first group that we worked through. And we brought in new people to try and learn the skills, because it's also a lot of these skills are dying because the younger generations are not interested, because there isn't a value attached to it, and there isn't that opportunity of I can make money out of this, and it's not, because it's not valued as much as it should be. So what we do struggle a lot with is that older generation that's getting almost to the point where they can't do it anymore, and there's no one to take over. So the first group we identified, we tried to assist with that. Obviously, Kulani has been largely unfunded, so we haven't been able to invest as much time and energy into those, but we've put in what we can where we can. And from that, we built relationship with them for 2 years. We then were contracted by Conservation South Africa to assist with some crafters in Valfording community that they had been working with. And so for the last 2 years now, we've been helping there, and that's on a contractual basis. So that's been able to fund the training a bit more. And we love collaboration. We love working with other organizations. It's a big part of who we are. So we've been assisting there, working very closely in developing the Vugimamusi Arts and Crafts Cooperative. And they make beautiful items. They actually go and harvest the sisal plants from the old sisal plantations in Valfordine. It's an alien invasive plant. They go and harvest that. They strip the leaves down. They separate the fiber from the leaf and they dry it out. And then they make a braided rope that they then craft placemats out of. Mm. So the beautiful kind of conservation story that comes out of that is also really important, and such a... Yeah, it's something that they've been doing for years and years and years, and the grannies that are there now learned it from their grannies. So it's been passed down generations as well. And then lastly, we do have crafters that we do identify and we see potential with, and if there's an avenue for funding to help them develop their skills, we then step in. But a lot of what we do, I describe Kulani as a mentorship and training organization, and we'll never go in and do a 3-day crafting workshop because we don't believe that that's how skills are built.
Yeah.
So mentorship is a big part of what we do, and to be able to mentor someone, you have to build relationship and trust, and that takes time. So we really try and commit between a year or 2 years to a group of crafters so that we can build that. And then the last group that we are working with now is in partnership with Wild Impact, and that is the orange building that I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yes.
And they are beaders, so they do a lot of beading work.
And obviously, you know, you mentioned the skills with regards to handing down, and the new generation today, I can understand that they don't see the value in what that is. And technology, education has changed, so youngsters What is the what pulls them back towards that? So unfortunately, I understand that it's difficult to push to actually push those traditions down.
Absolutely.
And but would there not be an opportunity, or maybe there is already an opportunity for cross training, where you've got skilled artists that you, that would pick something up like that so much quicker.
Definitely.
Because they're in the, in that artistic collective.
Yes.
So someone that's making something similar, let the Gorgors maybe train them as well, so that there's a bit of a cross training between everybody. Or is it, is it quite like this is my skill?
So there's a little bit of both. So sometimes the collaborations are easy and it's easy to pull groups of people together. But a lot of times these are skills that are passed down from mothers to daughters. And so that family link is quite important in a lot of groups. Even when we say, you know, from a sustainability side of things, and we workshop it with the groups of crafters, and we say, okay, how are we going to become more sustainable if you can't see what you're doing anymore because your eyes are old now?
Yeah.
Or your body's tired and you don't want to walk to all the way to the center anymore. You know, there's these conversations that come out, and oftentimes when they're identifying the younger people that must come in, it's always family.
Okay.
So there's a very strong family link, which is beautiful, because that's how it was done back in the day, before we had, you know, when we were all living in these more rural settings. So it's a really beautiful thing that they pass it down to family members first. What I have noticed is the younger generations need to see it as hip and fun, and it's going to make me money, because everyone wants to make money, right? So it's got to make money. It's got to be seen as cool. And so what we're now trying to do is bring in an angle of I'm working on some projects where we are working with a fashion designer who's going to bring in elements of the crafted stuff into that range. So then it suddenly becomes this fashion product. And I think that's where we're going to start winning the younger generation over.
Yes, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I think about it, we've already had quite a few Africans walking the walks of Paris runway, doing fashion weeks overseas, Milan fashion weeks with African attire, African clothing.
Definitely.
So that would be very encouraging. I mean, I could think of someone that does intricate weaving and beading to create a beautiful bag or a hat that goes with an outfit, you know, as an accessory.
Definitely.
So
definitely.
What a lovely opportunity that would be. And you know, yes, the youngsters, we've got to push them in the right direction at the end of the day. And in terms of marketing and the marketing that you've got to assist with regards to these artists, you were mentioning that currently you are dealing with them. Where do you help them to sell their produce? And then you mentioned a little earlier on as well, is that you want to, going forward, you want to look at something online.
Yes. So currently we are at all the farmers markets. So we will have a table tomorrow at the farmers market.
I'll definitely be there.
And then we are working in the Timbavati Supplier Development Program as well with Timbavati Foundation and Indalo Inclusive. We are being mentored by Indalo Inclusive in that space to become one of the preferred suppliers for the Timbavati lodges. So we're working on our catalogue that will then be distributed to the lodges there to be able to put in their curio shops or buy for decor or whatever it is that they need. We currently also are working in, at the Orpen Gate, there's an orange building on the side by the Manyaleti Road. And it has a big sign that says shop. So when you drive past there, please stop in. But we operate from there, and we have all of the crafters' goods for sale in that store. It's open 7 days a week from 8 to 4. And we've been operational there. That is in partnership with Wild Impact, which is formerly Africa Foundation. And we began negotiations there about 2 years ago. It took us a year to negotiate with the crafters and the board and the community to make sure that it was the right fit.
Yeah.
And we came in about a year ago. We had our launch, I think it was in October last year or November. And we've been open there since then. We've got interns that are shop assistants there that are part of the Yes for Youth program, which is a work experience program for young people that are struggling to get into the workplace. We have an incredible setup there. We have plans for a coffee shop. We tried to go full on in the beginning, but it was just not, we weren't ready for it. So we've just scaled back slightly back to the, just the crafts, and we're going to be bringing in the coffee shop again with hopefully some form of barista training that can happen for community members that can then become a database for lodges that maybe need baristas in the lodge or restaurants in the area and all of that. And then going forward, we've just got funding for a concept that is called Kulani in a Box. And I'm very excited about this. And Kulani in a Box is very much a warehousing and distribution model for community crafters where they will be able to drop their goods at the Open Hub. We will take photos of it, put it onto our website. It'll go onto the online catalog and be available for purchase, and it'll get warehoused and packaged in the space there in our storeroom. And what that is allowing us to do is to reach a national market straight away. But we're also applying for an import-export permit so that we can also then reach out into the international market. So with that, we're also trying to partner with other organizations that have crafters. We want to really offer local from this, from South Africa even, but for now staying within the Biosphere region and the Vembe Biosphere and see what we can do in terms of reaching a bigger market there. And it's, and we're doing a rebrand. It's going to be very kind of high-end focused probably because we want to attach that value.
Yes.
There will be some stuff that's maybe not on the very, very expensive side of things. There'll be some items there as well, but we really are trying to reach that high-end market to show the value of what's being done here.
And not forgetting, this is generations of talent.
Mm, exactly.
It's, that's what the difference is that this is not just something someone's decided to do overnight.
No.
This is generational talent that's been handed down, and the value is endless.
Yes.
There isn't a value attached to it because it is such a skill. And I couldn't agree with you more, where you need to look at going high end.
Yes.
And there is a huge market in Europe for South African
yes.
art. And I think that is a wonderful way to actually focus on it.
And I think one of those projects that we're now also working towards is within the, you talk about Europe, there's a huge movement in Europe with sustainable leather. And we've partnered with the Leather Alchemist, who operate at Timbavati. And they are making vegetable tanned impala hides leather. So it's we then purchase the leather from them, and we are crafting items out of that. And what we're looking at doing there, and it's been a very collaborative space. We did some training through Kulani with them, which that was then born out of. And then we are also looking at being able to use them to come and do training to assist us in building micro tanneries in communities where when there's cattle or goats slaughtered, those skins are not just getting thrown away anymore, but it suddenly adds a value chain. Someone can operate that in their backyard. We're going to be working on very strict traceability throughout. So from that skin, where did it come from? Who tanned it? Who crafted it? And have that whole value chain traceable as well. So looking at those international markets, it really makes you look at the story of the product as well.
I was going to say, it's going back to telling a story.
Yes.
And all of this is story-based, and that's very much the culture.
Yes.
Of rural painters, rural artists, because they've always got such a story to tell.
Absolutely.
They must be the best storytellers in the world.
Absolutely.
So I can imagine that when you sell that item and you wrap it up and you put in a little story, a one-page story of traceability, where it came from, the workmanship that went into it, it even adds more value to that product.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day.
Absolutely.
But completely, and obviously with running all of this and dealing with the artists, they've also got to be given business training.
Yes.
And this is where you also come in with regards to that. How in-depth is it, or is it just so that they have an idea of what their profits margins, what they need to put back into their business, and in terms of what level is it that you show them this business training?
So this is really where Kruger to Canyons comes in, Kruger to Canyons Biosphere Region, where I'm also employed. And my job there is the Community Income Generation Manager. So I support SMEs in the communities throughout the landscape. And anything from farmers to the waste reclaimers to the crafters we're working with and various others. And with that being my position there, part of my job is the business training and training of these SMEs. And so we've just finished developing a business training manual. And it's the manual that we've developed is really extensive. It's looking at the why of your business. Why am I doing this, firstly? Is it a need in the community? And sometimes I think a lot of us can benefit from looking at if it's even a need in our community, because sometimes I think we have an idea and we run with it and there's 10 others doing the same thing. So yeah, it's going and looking at the need in the community. It's going and looking at do I understand who it's going to affect? Who are my stakeholders in this business? How do I want to set it up? Where am I going to sell my things? How am I going to get to market? Am I going to cover? What are my costs? How do I work out costs? That's one of the biggest things we've realized is crafters don't know how to cost their items. A lot of times, especially when some projects come in, is people will donate all the goods and not explain that they then have to buy more materials afterwards. And so you end up not costing that into your product, and suddenly you've used all your money, you haven't put anything aside. So it's talking about savings and investments. It's talking about how to grow my business, what's the scalability of it if I want it to grow, and who am I going to employ, who are my customer base going to be. So it's very extensive, and right at the end of that course we are also going to be offering a proposal writing course and assisting them with writing a proposal to the Task Foundation.
Oh, fantastic. That's a lot of in-depth knowledge that they're getting, hey?
Yeah.
And I think it's phenomenal because, like you said, these are old gorgos that have been just sitting and just crafting. And they've got no idea what it costs.
No, exactly.
And because maybe they have this misconception of they don't know the value of their products.
Absolutely.
So they get haggled and haggled, eventually they just say, okay, we'll take it. But there's such a more value add for what they are doing. And I think that's setting the boundaries for these artists to say, no, this is where we are priced at, and this is what it's worth at the end
Absolutely.
Of the day.
Absolutely.
So I couldn't
Absolutely.
Agree with you more. And to have someone encouraging you and saying it is okay to charge those prices, and it's deserving.
Yes.
And that's very gratifying, I think, for them. And I think for you too, you know, to see households successfully living off art, being an artist.
Yes.
That they can sustain their families and successfully put their kids through school. And I think it's a very gratifying for yourself as well to see.
Definitely. I want to give one example as well, is what I loved with Vugi Mamusi was we've been working with them for quite a while, and then we opened the shop, and so we also take some of their stock and we sell it in the shop. And from the sales that came in through these processes and all the different sales channels that came through us, they actually took a portion of that money together as a group without talking to us. They didn't need to talk to us, but they didn't mention anything to us. We didn't encourage anything. They decided on their own. And they took some of their money, put it into a savings so that they could build a toilet on the site where they're operating from. And I just thought that is investing in yourself as a business. And it's such a small act, but it's so powerful in the way that it expresses just how they're thinking about their business now.
That gave me goosebumps. That's lovely. Absolutely lovely. And obviously, Angie, you know, you've got to look at future goals and visions. You know, you've got to see where you want to go so that this becomes sustainability, not just for yourselves, but for the artists as well. What are the expansion goals that you are looking at? I know that you've got some increased reach. Obviously, you want to keep going with the artisans and the crafters in rural communities and within the Kruger to Canyon Biosphere Region diversity programs. Mm-hmm. And obviously, going that export market would also give you that expansion for goals at the end of the day. online presence, strategic partners. You're always looking at bringing people yes. on board. And I think that's wonderful because sometimes you can't just do it on your own. Mm-mm. Hey, you've got to have people that have come in with other different skill sets
yes.
that have got to come and assist. And then development of an art route. What does that fall yes. into? That sounds beautiful.
So anyone who has ever gone to kind of Elim area will know the Rebola Art Route, which is very focused on vendor arts. And there's a wonderful couple, Lisa and Dion, who run Love Limpopo. And they have been working with the artists on that art route for many, many years. And Limpopo is known for its art in South Africa. Limpopo, there's a lot of famous artists that come from Limpopo. And so the Rebola Art Route is a beautiful example of what we're wanting to do. But what I want, my big dream, I'm a big dreamer, I always have ideas. My big dream is to have an art route that basically goes Cape to Cairo, all the way through Africa. But starting, you have to start somewhere. So working at developing something within this region that links into the Rebola Art Route and then taking it further up. And also Kalani was birthed out of a vision for the arts as a whole. So just the arts and crafts are part of what our focus is now, but I'm working on a 2-year plan at the moment for a music education and development program for young people to kind of get the musical education. Music is a universal language. It's a beautiful thing about it. And you don't need to speak the same language to be able to play music together. And so we're working on a music education program as well as a mentorship within that space so that young people that are moving into the music industry, which is a very scary place for a young person, that we have partners in that space and mentors in musical mentors in these spaces that can step in and be safe places for young musicians entering the industry in South Africa. So that's one of the projects I'm working on at the moment. And then we are also in discussions about cultural arts festivals that include dance, drama, music, fashion, the arts, all of that. So that's the big vision.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Is that the arts as a whole start getting celebrated, because Africa has a lot to offer. Yeah. And being in South Africa, that's our focus point for now. But we'll see as we grow. And we partner.
And wouldn't it be wonderful to do something like, just kickstart something like that here in Limpopo?
Yes.
And just like they have in Grahamstown, they have the arts festival.
Yes.
And from having lived there, we used to go every year to that festival.
Amazing.
But what we noticed that over the years, a lot more African art came into it.
Yes.
And African artists were more highlighted. And you need that synergy, because yes. it's not just about it's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just comedy and not just music. It's not there's different cultures now to take into consideration. 100%. So you've got to mix it all. And those cultures come with their own music, come with their own yes. food, comes with their own art. So the synergy of all of that together, I think, can be fantastic. And, I mean, could you imagine having an arts festival kicking off here in Limpopo?
It would be incredible. Oh. And I think that's definitely one of the visions that we have for that, because also what I love about African arts as a whole, whether it's dance, whether it's drama, whether it's music, whether it's the crafting or the actual painting type of arts, it's the storytelling that comes out of our cultures in our country are very strong. So the storytelling and the folklore that comes through is just beautiful. And I think that that's something that not a lot of places in the world always has in its art space.
And do they offer workshops for, is it something that you would consider that where they offer workshops for Europeans? You know, that Europeans come through and they want to just come and sit and see how they are working. Because they are crafting at that gate? Or is it a finished product that comes there?
So at the moment, most of the crafting happens in the ladies' homes.
In their homes, okay. And in their living areas.
Yes. And then we have set up that they can have these workspaces, but most of the time they're actually more comfortable at home, okay. And it's easier. But that said, we are starting to branch into immersive experiences with the crafters that are wanting to. We have one lady, for instance, that makes clay pots. So I went and sat with her one day and we dug the clay out of her garden. We sat on the floor in her home making these little clay pots with her hands. They wrapped us in traditional cloth so that we had almost an apron over us. And then we molded our pots. They take a few days to dry, so that's the only thing, is that you don't necessarily get your own pot. But then she had some pre-prepped ones, and then they actually put it in a fire to fire it. So they are, I suppose it's similar to pit firing, but it's the traditional, and they use cow dung and branches to then fire these pots. And that whole process of just sitting in her home and being part of that, and she couldn't speak English well, her daughter had to translate, and just that raw kind of immersive experience was beautiful. So we have trialed it, and we were very fortunate that Monwana supported us with bringing us out for a group of their guests, and we've trialed it at Monwana, and we're busy refining the process to be able to offer that as a experience for lodgers, either on site at the lodge or coming to the community. And actually I prefer that because it's more
comfortable for the artist.
More comfortable for the artist,
but
definitely.
What a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
For someone that's overseas, a tourist that's coming in. But you know, even for us locals, it's an experience that I haven't been into a location or a town, not, you know, their living environments, and gone in and see how they live and eat and survive. And you know, so even as a local, it would be a wonderful experience. Mm. But I can imagine being a mind-blowing experience for tourists that come in and get to experience this one-on-one. I think it's phenomenal.
And I think the thing that hits me every time I'm with the ladies in Valfordines is that simplicity that comes and that calmness of life, which we don't have here. We really overcomplicate life. And just that they are so comfortable and there's no stress. There's no stress.
That was a humble.
I'm sure there's stress. Let me correct myself. I'm sure there's stress, but it doesn't guide their life like it does with us. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from that as well.
Yeah, completely. I think to be more appreciative of what you have around you. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where we are material driven and financial driven. And we lose sight of that.
Yeah.
When if you go back to how humble they are and how they live.
Yeah.
No wonder they're happier.
Yeah.
You know, no wonder they're less stressed at the end of the day. What is the long-term vision with regards to Kalani Collective, Angie? I know, you know, your vision is always to establish the Kalani Collective as a leading hub for artisanal craftsmanship. So you want the long-term vision for what you want to achieve.
The long-term vision that I want to achieve, it's actually quite simple, actually. It's giving opportunities and platforms to people that didn't have it before. So I've always said, what is the difference between someone in London on the West End and someone from Valfordines? The difference is opportunity. Yeah. That's the only difference. And so to be able to provide opportunities for people to have the same access to building careers, I think that's my main goal. And within the arts as a whole. And then the replicability of what we're doing now. So being able to replicate this throughout Africa would be very important to me as well.
Well, this sounds like such an amazing collective, and I think that there's such a lot that can happen with this, and I think the future is absolutely endless with something like this. Yeah. And I can see the passion in your face when you talk about this.
Thank you.
Because it's something that's close to your heart, and it takes a lot. But if people would like to get involved in this collective, or people would like to become a mentor in some way or other, can they get hold of you, Angie? I see you've got some email addresses here available, info@kalanicollective.org, and you can go onto your website, www.kalanicollective.org, and then I've got two cell phone numbers, Angie.
Just my one.
Just the one. Can I use your number?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, so there's a number for Angie. It's 078-201-5881. And if you want to get hold of Angie directly and somehow get involved or be there as a mentor or offer something else towards this project, I'm sure that they will accept it with open arms.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fantastic, Angie. I'm going to be keeping my eye on this as well. And once you are online, please let us know as well, so we can link it with HFM and we can spread that word out as well.
Thank you so much, Lou.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Also, just to say, people, if the probably one of the easiest ways to get hold of us is also through Instagram.
Yes.
So just look us up on Instagram if you want to see the work we're doing. We share a lot to our stories. There's story highlights at the top, and you can reach out to me there as well.
And then obviously tomorrow at the farmers market,
yes,
there will be a stand there. And what will they be selling there?
They'll be selling a lot of the crafted items. So okay, we've got two interns that will be at the market tomorrow.
Lovely.
And I will also be at the Timbavati AGM tomorrow for any landowners that want to come chat.
Fantastic. It's always such a pleasure. I always think when Angie comes in, I always say, ach, it'll just be a quick chat. It's been 45 minutes.
Wow. Amazing.
So
thank you.
It's always an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much. This will be recorded. It is recorded. I'll clean it up. I'll send it out.
Thank you.